Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Facebook.com/issuesETC.
Yeah, he is a skeptic, and despite what you may believe, I'm something of a skeptic as well. I think one of the reasons these books have found a mass appeal is that he is skeptical. He's diving into these conspiracy theories from the standpoint of somebody who doesn't believe them. And so you can be an intelligent reader and say, well, I'm sort of interested in this, but I really doubt it's real. And at every point, Langdon is right there with you doubting it's real.
That, of course, is Dan Brown, author of The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons and his latest, The Lost Symbol, talking about his hero in those three novels and their related films, such as they are, Robert Langdon. He says Langdon and the inventor of Robert Langdon, he's a skeptic. You know, a lot of people who buy into conspiracy theories and believe them and promote them, like Dan Brown, consider themselves to be skeptic. They say, I'm skeptical of what the government's telling me, what the church has told me, what historians have taught us. And yes, you can be a skeptic of the truth and still hold to conspiracy theories. But when does the theory become a substitute for facts and for reason and for truth? We're going to talk about conspiracy theories for the last half hour of Issues Etc. on this Tuesday afternoon. Do you think Christians are susceptible to conspiracy theories? I know a few who have some. We find them on the left, we find them on the right, we find them everywhere. Ken Samples is our guest. He's senior research scholar for Reasons to Believe, based in Anaheim, California. He's author of the book, A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test. Ken, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
Do you think the Christians are more susceptible or less susceptible to conspiracy theories?
You know, that's a really good question. It's a question I've been thinking about recently, and I'm not sure where to come down on it, except to say that I think it's possible that Christians could be very susceptible to conspiracy theories. I mean, first of all, Christians believe there's kind of an invisible hand active in the world. I'm speaking, of course, of kind of the spiritual warfare aspect, that there is this malevolent force out there that cannot be seen, that may be manipulating things behind the scenes. And then, of course, some aspects of Christian eschatology or some particular viewpoints that would talk about a one-world government and these kinds of things, I think leave people open to the idea that, you can't necessarily trust what people are doing. So I think everybody, because we all have at times impaired thinking, we all have to be careful about our thinking. But yeah, I think sometimes maybe Christians are a little susceptible to conspiracy theories.
What is common to them all? What is the basic, if you can call it rational framework to a classical conspiracy theory, be JFK assassination, UFOs, whatever it is? What's the common thread running through them?
Well, you know what's interesting about that question, Todd, is it seems to me as I've studied through these conspiracy theories, whether it's the JFK assassination, UFOs in Roswell, 9/11, which now statistics indicate that more than a third of the country believes was an inside job, George Bush rather than Osama bin Laden, and then, of course, the Dan Brown ideas of the early fathers of our country being involved in masonry. What's interesting, and this is kind of the samples theory here, if you will, so, you know, be careful to be skeptical of it, but it seems to me that conspiracy theories need some kind of political context to kind of make their way. I was 5 years old when President Kennedy was shot, and I remember the reaction of my parents. I remember that there, all of the stations on television, there was nothing but the assassination for 4 straight days. But, you know, people doubting the Warren Commission only really got going once the Vietnam War started going bad. And people said, well, if they lied to us about the war, maybe they're lying about the JFK assassination. Something similar, I think, in the Roswell kind of situation, where people began to say, hey, the government doesn't want to tell us the truth about these issues. They're very secretive. That made Roswell kind of open up. So in some respects, I think that there are always unanswered questions. There are always issues that are relevant to these. But I almost think that in order to kind of make them full-orbed conspiracy theories, there needs to be some real reason to be suspicious of the government.
Okay, let's just run through examples because some people might not understand what we're talking about. Give us some examples of kind of the big ones that Americans have glommed onto, and in some cases, a pretty healthy majority of Americans buy into them in one form or another.
Yeah, I think probably the granddaddy of all conspiracies is the JFK assassination conspiracy theory. A Gallup poll in 2001, Todd, reported that now 81% of Americans believe that there was a conspiracy to kill President Kennedy, and the majority of those believe that it involved the government. I mean, all you need to do is see the movie JFK by Oliver Stone, and he implies that Richard Nixon and Lyndon Johnson, the CIA, and all of these groups were involved. So 81% is according to one article I saw on the internet. A second one, of course, is the big UFO conspiracy theory. I've seen this stat for some time and, in fact, contributed to a book about the study of extraterrestrials and UFOs with a couple colleagues. 48% of Americans apparently believe that we're being visited by literal metallic crafts from very distant places in the universe. And to add to that, 71% believe that the government has not revealed everything that it knows about UFOs. So that is such a huge topic everywhere. A third one, and it's getting some gusto, you might say, the 9/11 conspiracy theory. About more than a third now believe it was an inside job, that either Bush and his administration allowed it to happen or manipulated it. And so that conspiracy, and of course, to test my theory again, once the Iraqi war began to be very controversial or go south, so to speak, then the 9/11, I have another reason now to question the government. And then the fourth one is, of course, the secret society theory, the idea, you know, that there's this invisible dark hand behind civilization, Skull and Bones, the Illuminati, or Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol, that the early founding, some of the founding fathers were involved in Masonry. Well, this is what Hitler said in the 30s, that the Jews were controlling the money markets, were manipulating Europe. They were the intellectuals behind communism. So here are four kind of major conspiracy theories that involve the government that remain popular.
You say that we really ought to put these things to the test, really to a simple test of logic. And you begin with the question, does the theory, whatever it may be, hold together foundationally? What are you asking here?
Yeah, I'm really getting at the question that, you know, I think, Todd, one of the problems we have, even in the church, is rather than telling people what to believe about things, kind of giving them a tool chest to know what kinds of questions to ask so that they can make biblical discernment a regular part of their life. That first question really deals with the question of coherence, which is so foundational. Is it internally consistent? At a foundational level, does this rumor, does this explanatory theory about the government and about these events, does it hold together consistently? You know, if a theory is just filled with contradiction, if you affirm one thing on one side and then contradict yourself on the other side, it's going to be incoherent. And anything that is that is legitimately incoherent cannot be true. So it's the question of logical consistency at its foundation.
So, for instance, someone who had have a theory about how the government is run or something like that, who would, on the one side of his theory balance scale, assign to the government almost omnipotence in its ability to control information, and then on the other side of the theory assert that government can't get anything done because it's inept, would have kind of a logical inconsistency.
That's perfect. That is the perfect example, because oftentimes these conspiracy theories, virtually all four of these, on one side they speak of the government as if it is totally inept, and then they've pulled off this remarkable conspiracy. In the case of JFK, for some 46 years? Well, you can't have one. You know, people will say about George Bush, he's totally inept, but then he pulls off this inside job that people cannot even detect. You can't have it both ways.
Another question that you suggest we ask of the theory is, does the theory comport with the facts? We've got about a minute before we take a break. Very briefly, what are you asking for there?
Good theories are very closely tied to the facts. They need to be fact-driven, and not only fact-driven, but a good theory, a good explanation, ties the facts together and really provides a good explanation for them. And so as they say, you know, in law, you've got to have some factual connections for these things. You can't just pull things out of thin air.
When we come back from the break, on the subject of the facts, I've noticed with a lot of conspiracy theories, the facts eventually either are disregarded or, and we'll talk about this in just a moment, or they are kind of put through the mill of the conspiracy theory to one way or another support the theory. They get twisted. They get turned around. For instance, if you say, well, why haven't I seen a picture of an alien or of a UFO? They'll say, well, the absence of pictures is evidence of how good the government is at covering them up and keeping them hidden. Now, you see, you've taken a fact, that is, no one's been able to produce a picture, and somehow, rather than being evidence against the theory that there are UFOs, it gets turned into evidence for the theory. Ken Samples is our guest from Reasons to Believe. We're talking about conspiracy theories. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday, October the 13th here on Issues Etc.
Let us sing. It's all interpretation. To find the truth, you gotta read between the lines.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
These days, value affords me a new attitude. It lets me appreciate that I can start my day with more than a $6 cup of coffee, and that I officially have permission to skip dinner out to spend time talking with my family over Casserole Inn. Concordia Publishing House offers Christian products that help me focus on what matters most. Visit any of the three Concordia bookstores downtown, in Kirkwood, and on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, or shop online at cph.org and find out what a new value attitude looks like in your life.
Treadmill for the mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
International human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the importance of Issues Etc.
Before settling in England and France, I had my own Christian radio program for 10 years in California and 2 years in Washington State. I was also a regular for over a decade on national religious television. In a word, I have had a great deal of contact with evangelical programming, both good and bad, and my judgment in this area is probably worth something. In my opinion, Issues Etc. is one of the very few programs on Christian radio willing to discuss tough questions with solid theological answers. I consider it a great privilege to be able to appear on the program regularly, and I commend it to every serious listener.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending the Faith, Teaching the Truth, Issues, Etc.
Well, do you believe in conspiracy theories? Do you think that Christians are more susceptible to believing in these theories than non-Christians? Our call-in number on this Tuesday afternoon, October the 13th, talking to Ken Sample about conspiracy theories, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Email us right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. By the way, you can read an article that Ken has written about conspiracy theories under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Ken, some of these theories, a lot of them, if not most of them, appear to be, at least in the minds of those who hold to them, fact-proof. One of the things you suggest we ask is, how well does the theory handle counter-evidence and viable challenges? What are you asking here?
Yeah, very, very important. You know, when you think of a model of explanation, when you think of an explanatory theory, a theory that is intended to explain data, good theories, whether they would be philosophical or scientific or even a theological theory, so to speak, it's got to be able to accommodate counter evidence. And what I mean by that, there are occasionally you're going to stumble across new evidence. Is that theory able to answer the challenges that come along? And sometimes theories have to be kind of pliable. They need to be able to make adjustments on them. Oftentimes, however, these theories are kind of set forth, and they really have no explanation for counter evidence. I used to tell my students in an ethics course I taught, you know, if you're going to take a position on abortion, then tell me what the best argument is on the other side and give me a response to it. Often I would have students come back, Todd, and say, I didn't know that there were tough issues on the other side of the coin. And so I'm asking people who believe in some of these government conspiracies, maybe you ought to consider reading some of the best critiques and see if you can respond to them.
The best question, and I want to come back to a few that you asked in between, but the very best question that I have found in at least challenging conspiracy theories has to do with falsifiability or falsification. And that is to say, oh, dear holder of conspiracy theories, please tell me what single fact could destroy your theory, what single fact could render your theory false. Now, if they can't come up with one, what should we conclude, Ken?
Yeah, this is a very important point, and in fact, I think it really shows how the Christian worldview is often so superior to other explanations about reality in the world. I mean, you think of 1 Corinthians 15. Paul sets forth the idea that if Christ isn't raised from the dead, then our faith is futile. We're still in our sins. It seems that Paul is saying, look, There is the theoretical possibility that the resurrection could be falsified, but yet it could also be verified. When I have read the literature of the other world's religions, it's very difficult to find one particular area that would falsify Hinduism or falsify Buddhism. Now, oftentimes, and again, I'm sympathetic to this idea that if there's no way, at least in theory, to falsify something, then it's very difficult to in any way prove it or verify it. It's kind of lost in limbo. There's no way of kind of getting at it. There's no way of really evaluating it. And I personally think in that context that it carries very little rational weight.
So, I mean, not that it is a theory, but the Christian worldview is, of course, founded upon the fact of Christ's resurrection. And I think even Paul concedes in 1 Corinthians, that if Christ is not raised, then the theory, such as it is, the theology he sets forth, shouldn't be regarded as true in any sense. Is that an example of saying, here is a fact that could falsify this truth claim?
I think so. Todd, I was in a debate with an atheist many years ago at the University of California, Irvine, And during the exchange with the atheist, I said, look, I think there are theoretical ways to falsify my Christian faith. And I brought up the resurrection. I then turned to him and said, now, what would falsify your naturalistic atheistic worldview? Now, I'm not saying what this atheist said is characteristic of all atheists, but he turned to me and said, nothing you or anybody else could ever say could shake my belief in atheism. Well, I said, well, then why are we here? I mean, this is called the fallacy of a priorism. Nothing can ever count against my theory. Well, again, that is, at that point, I think we've ceased to have a rational discussion.
You also say that we should ask whether or not a theory avoids unwarranted presumptions. What are you asking for there?
Well, there's a big, in fact, I say huge difference between presuming to know something and actually knowing something. I was on a radio debate with a fellow debating the Kennedy assassination, and I made the point that the FBI discovered Oswald's rifle on the sixth floor of the book depository building, and it had Oswald's thumbprints, handprints on the rifle. And the first person I was debating said, well, but of course the FBI put it there to make it look like it was Oswald. Well, I said, look, do you have any evidence that that's true? You can't presume that. You've got to try to show that that was in fact the case. And so when it comes to logic and careful reasoning, you have to be very careful about what you're presuming to be true. It's much preferable to be in a position where you can say, look, this is a reasonable point of view rather than I've just presumed it to be the case.
We've talked many times about conspiracy theories on this program, and other guests have pointed out that the appeal of the conspiracy theory is often it, in some sense, makes sense of a world that seems to be kind of out of control. I mean, if the government is as inept as it appears, then, wow, I think I'm a little more scared than if they're omnipotent. And so it makes sense in people's lives. What do you think of that explanation for the appeal?
I think it's a powerful point. Years ago, I read William Manchester's book, The Death of a President. Manchester was a historian. At the end of that book, in which he concluded that it was likely that the Warren Commission was correct, that Oswald had killed Kennedy, and that there wasn't any clear evidence of a conspiracy, foreign or domestic, Manchester said, look, the reason why people come up with conspiracy theories is how could somebody as insignificant as Oswald kill somebody as significant as Kennedy? And so you have this terrible crime. You need some terrible being or some terrible explanation on the other hand. And the analogy he uses is the Holocaust is the worst crime, but then you have these terrible evil Nazis to balance it out. I think that there is a lot of insight to that understanding.
What is the greatest danger of entertaining, dabbling in, or believing conspiracy theories for a Christian?
Well, you know, look, I'd want to say, Todd, first of all, that conspiracies happen. I mean, I think it was proven clearly in law that there was a small conspiracy to kill Abraham Lincoln. I think it's also clear that the government can at times engage in clandestine acts. Richard Nixon at least admitted later that he knew more about the Watergate break-in than he initially said. But I think in terms of Christianity, sometimes our conspiracy thinking can make Christianity look bad. And, you know, again, I appreciate that people believe in the second coming of Christ. They believe that there are evil forces in the world, the demonic. But I think we have to show that we prize truth, that we're people of integrity, and that we won't fudge the truth just to make our view look better. So I think probably the challenge is we can sometimes make Christianity look less than credible by being gullible.
Folks, when you purchase Ken Sample's book, A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test, using the Amazon.com link at our website, a portion of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click On Demand, and look for A World of Difference by our guest, Ken Samples. He's Senior Research Scholar for Reasons to Believe, based in Anaheim, California, author of the book, A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test. Ken, thank you again.
My pleasure, Todd.
Look, the truth is uncomfortable. It's tense. It is often incomplete and patchy, especially in a world of fallen sinners such as us. And it is discomforting to think that terrible crimes can be committed, that bad things can happen, and sometimes there's no big theory, there's no grand plan behind it. Will you take comfort in your conspiracy theory? Because after all, that's really the reason you hold to it, if you hold to it. It gives you some hollow comfort in this kind of a world. Or will you take comfort in the only comfort that Holy Scripture really affords us? That in spite of our fallenness, in spite of the chaos that we have created in this world individually and corporately by our own sin, God has issued a remedy for that sin in the perfect life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, entered our history. If there's a conspiracy, it's God's. He's conspiring to destroy our sin, death, and our enemy, the devil, and he's succeeded. And he's told us all about it, how he did it, and that it's all done in the death and resurrection of his son, Jesus Christ. That's all the comfort you really need now and for eternity. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.